and welcome back to the Sincere Reform Podcast. My name is Zach Wise, and I'm here with my co-pastor, Brandon Burks. And today we're going to be discussing another very timely topic, one that seems to rear its head every so often when there's a lot going on in our culture that is disconcerting. And I think right now this is one of those times where people are discussing the mark of the beast, and what that is, and whether people are receiving the mark of the beast, because as we look around the world, we see various economic things happening. We see people who are being implanted with microchips and getting shots. And I remember the number of years ago that the people were talking about the logo from Apple, the Apple being bit was the mark of the beast. And if you bought an Apple iPhone, then you were receiving the mark of the beast. And so this happens over and over, and it's quite regular in our experience. But again, this is, people are truly concerned about this because the Bible addresses a mark of the beast. And rightly, people who believe that the Bible is true and God's word don't want to receive the mark of the beast. And so today we're going to be talking about what that mark might be. We're going to be getting into the book of Revelation in order to understand it on its own terms. Brandon, what are some thoughts? Where might we want to begin here?
So you're just kind of thinking big picture, as we approach the book of Revelation. Obviously, it's the very last book in the Bible. It is speaking about events past, present, and future. It's speaking about spiritual heavenly realities. In many ways, the book of Revelation is kind of peeling back the curtain for us and showing us spiritual realities behind the mundane, kind of showing us behind the scenes spiritual things, and really kind of shows us a clash that is happening. And of course, it's a clash, a war that was spoken about all the way back in Genesis 3:15, this clash between the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent. We really see highlighted for us in the book of Revelation as we see the people of God and the people of Satan clashing together. And we see, again, two different people groups. Within the book of Revelation, we see a people group devoted to God and the Lamb, and they're worshiping Christ, and they're following Christ and following his commandments, and so on and so forth. And then you have those who are following after the beast, following after the Antichrist or Satan, the false prophet. And there's two different groups that are often clashing. In fact, there's a portion or a section in Revelation where it appears that the church has been so suppressed and persecuted that even the unbelievers then actually exchange presents with each other like it's Christmas time, because they're so excited the church has been killed in their view. So we see these two people groups clashing, and what we also see is what God and what Satan are doing with respect to those two people groups. So we see God sealing his people. So Revelation 7, Revelation chapter 9, God seals his people. It's a way of protecting them, not necessarily from physical harm, because many of them are martyred and they are persecuted and suffer in physical ways, but it is a sealing them spiritually. It is a way of preserving them, that they will not succumb to the evil one, but they will endure it to the end. Revelation 2:10, Jesus says, "Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life." Well, that seal that God puts upon his people is a way in which we are faithful unto death, so that we do receive that crown of life. And there's a counterfeit that Satan does to that seal. And the counterfeit is the mark of the beast. So you have two kinds of people in the world. You have some people who are sealed, some people who are marked. So the mark is kind of that satanic counterfeit to what God is doing in the seal. So if that's kind of like a big picture highlight of the book, is that helpful?
I think it's really helpful. And I like how you're bringing out that counterfeiting action, because one of the things that when we think about the book of Revelation, and by the way, it's Revelation singular, Revelations, one of my pet peeves.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's for free today. but the I think one of the things that that counterfeiting is so helpful to note, because when we think about the dragon and the two beasts within Revelation, they are forming a counterfeit trinity, and that's over against Father, Son, and Spirit. And it's the dragon within that is the counterfeit father. And then he, from that dragon comes a beast that kind of resembles the dragon, but also kind of resembles Jesus, the Son. And then the second beast that comes performs things that are counterfeit of the Holy Spirit, bringing about miracles and false prophecy. And so I think that's really important because, as Brandon was saying, Revelation divides the world into two peoples, whereas we think about it from like a pluralist standpoint. Oh, there's all these different religions out there. But Revelation says, no, there's just two groups of people here. There's two kinds of worship. There's the true worship of the triune God. Then everything else is within the category of counterfeit worship that's offered up not to some real God, but it's actually ultimately offered up to the dragon by way of those two beasts. So I appreciate you bringing that up, because I think it's going to really help us here as we think about the marks. Let me just read for us the from Revelation 13, just briefly into Revelation 14, where we read about these the mark of the beast. And so speaking about the second beast, it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead. So note those two body parts, right hand and forehead, we're coming back to those, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark. That is, the name of the beast or the number of its name. Then it goes on to talk about this calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. And as you peek ahead into chapter 14, where it speaks about the 144,000, it talks about the name of the Lamb and his father's name written on the foreheads of the 144,000. So again, the naming of the true God is the counterfeit, is the counter of the false naming, the counterfeit naming that comes from the dragon and the beasts. So I think to establish that, there are two groups with two different namings occurring, and that this is a great spiritual reality, and that this is not, this is something that calls for wisdom. Let me kick over to Brandon now, see if you want to take us a couple steps further here.
Yeah, so kind of just thinking about it, I guess more practically, mm-hmm. this mark of the beast is not necessarily physical. Right? It's not necessarily a microchip implant in my hand or something like that. I think it could be. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen things like this throughout history. For example, there's a statement in 3 Maccabees, one of the apocryphal books, 3 Maccabees chapter 2, where it talks about Ptolemy the 4th, and he commanded Jews to sacrifice to a pagan idol, and if you didn't sacrifice, you were killed, and if you did sacrifice, you were marked, you were branded with an ivy leaf symbol, which was a symbol of a Greek god. And then if you had the mark, then you could enjoy economic privileges. If you didn't have the mark, then you could not buy or sell. So we've seen kind of permeations of Mark of the Beast throughout history. And I think it's helpful to note, though, that it's not necessarily a physical mark, because I think many people, we read about Mark of the Beast and we're thinking about some future implant that someone's going to force upon me in a future time, and that's not how we should think about the mark of the beast. Again, the forehead and the hand are being marked. Well, what does forehead signify? Well, the forehead signifies your belief, your devotion, your mindset, your who you are aligned with, your allegiance. It has all those connotations with putting something on your forehead. And then your hand would be the outworking of your commitments. So what you're committed to in terms of your mind, your belief, your outlook, then being put into action with your hand. So being marked by the beast could be somebody who's opposed to Christ and who is living a life in opposition to Christ. That could very much be mark of the beast. We see roots of this, I think, too, in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 6, where it's in the context of God giving the Ten Commandments and the law. And it says, chapter 6, verse 4, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." Now, I don't think that God was saying that all of Deuteronomy needs to be reprinted on our foreheads and reprinted on every post in our house. No, what he's saying is, he's saying that these things need to be on our minds. These things need to be spoken and taught often. These things need to be, we need to be committed at a very deep and basic level to these things. And they need to manifest in our lives in terms of how we live and how we act and how we speak and what we do. And so a counterfeit to what we just read in Deuteronomy 6 would be the mark of the beast, where somebody is committed to not Christ, to somebody who's antichrist, to Satan, or committed to that, and then living out in a way that is opposed very much to the gospel of Christ. And it's very, the mark of the beast tends to be this kind of esoteric, future, weird thing, but really it's a very practical thing. I wanted to read a statement by Richard Phillips. He wrote a helpful commentary on the book of Revelation, and he brings the mark of the beast into a very practical realm, and I really like what he put forth, so I'll read you a section of what he said. He said, "Ultimately, the mark of the beast involves a choice between the world and Christ. There is an obvious contrast between the mark, this mark, and the mark that Christ's people receive in chapter 7. The Christians in the church at Pergamum could not join trade guilds without accepting idol worship and cult prostitution. This practically meant that Christians there could not hold well-paying jobs. Christian businesses today may close down for refusing to fund abortion through their insurances. Christian military officers might forfeit promotion because they refuse to hide their faith. The point is that the beast paints Christians as disloyal to the governing regime because of our highest allegiance to Jesus. As a result, Christians are forced to the periphery of public life, unable to be elected to office or to operate small businesses." So he just kind of highlighted a few ways in which this could practically manifest itself, where your highest allegiance to Christ is actually going to kind of put you in the margins in wider society, where it might even be hard for you to have financial gain. And he mentioned one of the seven churches that Jesus spoke to in the beginning of the book of Revelation. And what was fascinating about this church is that this church was in a very wealthy part of the country, a very wealthy city, but the church was dirt poor. So you have this poor church in a very wealthy city, And they were poor because they were so pushed to the peripheral, because in order to participate in the financial gain and wealth of the society, you had to be part of a trade guild. And trade guilds would meet at a pagan temple. They would eat meat that was sacrificed to a pagan god. And then oftentimes they would be called prostitutes that would come out after the meal was over, and you would participate in sexual acts as part of this worship to this false god. And obviously, for obvious reasons, Christians could not participate in that. But that was kind of the place where you networked, you advanced your trade. And so if you had a business that was not part of a trade guild, then your trade was not going to be elevated, was not going to be advertised as much, and would probably be persecuted to some degree. And so anytime that happens, throughout the world, where a Christian, because of their allegiance with Christ, is forced to be marginalized, lose financial income, lose their life we're seeing the mark of the beast at play here, over against those who are sealed by God. Any other thoughts on that?
I think that's a really helpful way to put it. And I think that as we think about this marking done by the beast and this sealing performed by the true God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, we're not thinking about extraordinary things, are we? We're thinking about the ordinary things that are occurring between Christ's first and second comings, even going way back to Adam and Eve being kicked out of the garden. There are, from that point on, there are two spiritual cities that we can boil down mankind down to, these two peoples, the church and the world. And it's just helpful for us to not be quite so alarmed by things that could alarm us, of course, in an earthly sense, but not to think that we are accidentally taking the mark of the beast upon ourselves when we're still worshiping the true God and still living in fidelity toward him.
Yeah, that's helpful. I mean, the mark of the beast has a worship context. Mm-hmm. It's a worship thing. It is a renouncing of Christ and a following after Satan. Somebody could hold you down and say, I'm gonna implant you with the mark of the beast against your will. No, the mark of the beast involves your will. It involves your worship. It involves your commitments and your actions and all of that. So yeah, very helpful.
How about we maybe jump back to one thing that I read earlier from Revelation in terms of the 666?
Okay.
Sound good? Because again, that could cause some questions going on in people's minds.
Right.
But I think that just briefly we can probably address the 666, and then let me give a few thoughts, and maybe you can chime in here, Brandon. Mm-hmm. But clearly within the Bible, numbers have symbolism. And when you think about the number 6, you're thinking about that in contrast, I hope, in your mind right away to the number 7, that 6 being a number that's not quite to that divinely perfect number of 7. And to have 6 three times is going to be in contrast to having the number 7 three times, or the time that the angels within Isaiah chapter 6, sing out the thrice holy, 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 holy. That threefold repetition is significant within the Bible. And so to have that number 6 that's repeated three times, it's kind of like a getting to the point of not quite to the divine number, is it? Not quite to the moment of perfection, and stopping short, and to stop short three times, giving us the number of, I would take that as the fall of mankind, that's of not entering yet into that Sabbath of a 6 being repeated to have the number of the fall, the number of sin, the number of mankind. This I think I've seen a quote before of perfectly imperfect, kind of a mentality going on there. But so, Brandon, do you have any other thoughts on that, or maybe a different view on that sort of thing?
No, I think that's helpful. Yeah, I mean, the 6 is that incomplete number, mm-hmm. and it's expressed three different ways. I was actually going to read that quote that you mentioned.
Yeah, thank you. Good, thank you.
G.K. Beale, he said that the number 666 might be called completeness of sinful incompleteness. So it's this completeness of just incompleteness, of just sinfulness, of that which has fallen, that which is man-made and not that which is perfect and divine. Yeah, that leads me to a couple book recommendations as well. I wanted to, if you're interested in kind of diving into this some more, I think G.K. Beale's A Shorter Commentary, very helpful commentary here, because he shows the Old Testament background very, very well to the book of Revelation, when Revelation has in view like Daniel 7 or Ezekiel or whatever. He usually brings that out in a very helpful way. And then another one would be Kim Riddlebarger, The Man of Sin, Uncovering the Truth About the Antichrist. So obviously the Mark of the Beast, dealing with the Antichrist and all of that. So helpful read as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for that. I hope it's been helpful for you to be thinking about these things and to recognize that, yeah, somebody, again, pinning you down and writing the number 666 on you, or, you know, pinning you down and giving you a tattoo or whatever it is. These are not things that, these are much bigger realities that at times can come to physical expression. But let's not be alarmed, brothers and sisters, because within the book of Revelation, we see over and over that a victory belongs to Christ. And therefore, while the church suffers on earth, we are actually and ultimately victorious through that suffering. And so please, as you see things going on in the news and in the world around us, while we might be frustrated by things, we do not ultimately despair, because Christ has that great victory for us. And we hope this has been helpful for you again, as always. Thanks for joining us this week on the Cincy Reformed Podcast. We are sponsored by Westside Reformed Church in Cincinnati's Westside. Check us out at westsidereformed.org and worship with us on Sundays. We'd love to have you join us. So on behalf of Pastor Brandon, wish you a great week, and thank you for joining us. Bye-bye.